Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. Theosophy is the accumulated wisdom of the ages, and we here in Philadelphia try to keep before the public these ideas. On Wednesdays, we have a study class in the now it's the Key to Theosophy. And we read the text and discuss the few paragraphs that we read. And then on Sundays, we have this class, which deals with a broader subject matter. And if you would refer to our periodical, it will keep you abreast of all the activities at the lodge. And there's also something inspirational for you to read in your spare moments. But for the month of March, we are talking about mental progress. And this morning, we're talking about strengthening faith and wisdom. Now, these classes on Sunday are from 11 to 12, doors open at 10:30. And the same on Wednesdays, the doors open at 5:15 for the library and close at 7:15, and then our class begins at 7:30 to 8:30. This building is kept open for the sole purpose of disseminating these ideas of theosophy, that we are an association of students who are independently devoted to the cause of theosophy. We try to disseminate the fundamental ideas of this philosophy, but this comes down to a firmer conviction that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. That this lodge, like other lodges, doesn't take part in side issues. It just keeps to the theosophical teachings that we have in our library, in our desks, in the front table, that all can purchase. And it's the teachings of HPB, William Crosby, Mr. Crosby, and William Q. Judge. Now, they're not the authors of any of this. They are just the students who transmitted this secret doctrine to the world. And it has been presented for those who want it. It is free. It is your birthright. And it is here, presented to you, and you are again in this long process of lives, are given the opportunity to study this ancient truths again, because we have studied them in the past. This is just a continuation of that journey. So in keeping this as our focal point, we come together in the sense of we are not an organization. We do not have officers or anything of that nature. The sole bond between us are the teachings and unity and study. doing this, we create a center of truth that can be tapped into in Philadelphia. So hooray for us. Because we all become participants in that when we come here. Now this morning, we are taking up mental progress. We as students are always confronted with something that we thought we understood, but we had no idea what it meant. It's just a superficial understanding, and it was okay. But when you are forced to look at something a little closer, you see different things. So today we're going to embark upon the ideas of this ancient philosophy. And these ideas are that faith and wisdom are a dynamic power, are the creative force in the world we live. To better understand that idea, we will have a presentation by a student of this idea of faith and wisdom. Student, come on. He did.
A fundamental axiom in theosophy is that no one should accept as unquestionably true any statement of fact, principle, or theory which he or she has not tested for themselves. This does not exclude a reasonable reliance upon testimony, but only that blind innocence which sometimes passes for faith. We owe it to ourselves to enlarge the sphere of clear knowledge and to push back as far as possible the boundaries of opinion, hypothesis, and blind faith. Every human being has faith. Faith in something, some ideal, some conception, some religion, some formula. But while the faiths of different people have one or another object, the faith itself proceeds from the highest and is inherent in the heart of every being. Faith is the very basis of our nature. Whatever way we follow is because of the faith we have. We are convinced that our way, our belief, the where and the way we have placed our faith in, is the only right and true way. That the world is full of false faiths is because of the differing ideas, beliefs, and philosophies which limit faith itself to the means thought necessary for obtaining a particular object of faith. So let's talk a little bit about faith. In the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, faith is said to be of three kinds. Faith of the quality called sattva, the good and the true. Faith of the quality of raja, of action and of passion. And faith called tamas, of indifference and ignorance. These three qualities given to faith are in fact the three limitations placed on faith by every human being, for the power of faith in itself is limitless. We continually limit that power to its operation within the range of some minor object or ideal based on externalities. If one places his faith on any externality, whatever it may be, gods or men, religions or a system of thought, he has placed it upon a broken reed. He has limited the very power of his own spirit to expand itself beyond the limitations of his ideal. When, for instance, we accept the idea that nothing is real but that which we can see or hear or taste or smell or touch, we have placed our faith on a very low basis. There is some reason for our falsity of thought and action when we have assumed the present moment to be the only moment, the outward terrestrial world and this one existence to be the only life, from which we go, we know not where, nor to what purpose it has been. To look on all beings according to one's own limitations of mind and range of perception, and to see only their externalities of speech or action, is not seeing them as they really are. An outside God, or an outside devil, an outside law, an outside atonement for sins, the idea of sin being other than a denial of our own spiritual nature, all are external face of the nature of Thomas, or ignorance. Ignorance always leads to superstition. Superstition leads to false belief, and false belief to false faith. There is no question of sin or sinner. There is no question of good or evil. There is only the question, are you working for yourself as you understand yourself, or are you working for the self as you want to understand who you are, and not for anything else? If you want nothing for yourself, require nothing for this body, but think only to do for others what is needed, comes under the law of the very force you make attraction to. Support comes in every direction. The whole nature, spiritual, intellectual, psychical, astral, and physical, is strengthened. Even the surroundings are improved. It is our lack of faith, our unfaith in that, which puts us where we would not be. Denying the Christ within, the Krishna within, the spirit within, is the unpardonable sin. And so long as we crucify that Christ within, just so long will we suffer on the cross of human passions and desires. We may strive for better bodies, better positions, for possessions of all kinds, better qualities, better understanding on one condition only, that the motive be to make ourselves the better able to help and teach others. The only true faith is that in the highest, in the changeless, in that which each in his innermost nature is. The only true path is the trusting to the law of our own spiritual nature. Men may go from faith to faith, from faith in one thing to faith in another, moving along from life to life and obtaining some result according to the nature of the ideal upon which their faith is fixed. But the only way out is through the faith in the spiritual, essential nature of all beings. Let me restate those last two sentences. The only way, the only true path to the spiritual, essential nature of all beings is to have trust, have faith in the essential true nature of all beings. And no greater gift could be given to any human being than the inalienable fact he and each one has the power to realize it. This is a part of the ancient knowledge known by a few, followed by a few, which they have ever brought into a world of false faiths and tried to teach the people in general. Now, if you remember the title for today's session, it was Strengthening Faith and Wisdom. We have talked somewhat about faith, but what about wisdom? What is wisdom? Wisdom isn't simply intelligence or knowledge or even understanding. It is the ability to use these to think and act in such a way that common sense prevails and choices are beneficial and productive. You don't get wisdom from a textbook. You do not get knowledge enough to make you wise. You don't receive understanding from simply hearing others. It could be that knowledge coupled with experience are the most valuable tools you have in acquiring wisdom. That is to say, what we learn from experience gives us the wisdom whether to try a particular thing or make a certain choice or not. You can hear lectures on swimming, you can read books on swimming, and you can understand the buoyancy of water from observation. But until you jump in the water and get some experience, you won't have true wisdom about the water, and that may make all the difference between swimming and drowning. Experience is often the best teacher. In a priceless devotional small book entitled The Voice of the Silence, it says that there are three halls that must be followed in order to attain to spiritual life. We all live in the hall of ignorance. That's one of them. Learning is the second, and wisdom is the third. We live in the hall of ignorance, and it's a very tough place to live. We seek the next hall, but that is the hall of learning. And be extremely beware, because under every flower, every blossom, there is a serpent waiting. Finally, you reach the hall of wisdom. You have reached the indestructible fount of omniscience. The postscript, however, is that there is more. There is always more. In closing this brief talk, let me leave you with the words of Benjamin Franklin. He said, very briefly, "The doorstep to the temple of wisdom is knowledge of our own ignorance."
Well, if there have been some questions, Spark, please.
Understanding was mentioned, and of course it's crucial. Never really thought of it before, but understanding is kind of a strange word. It's like, are we standing under something, or is it something deep that we're standing on? It's understanding. And although we may not automatically get it by listening to others, we think, how else are we going to get an understanding? But then we need to practice that. That's when the That's what we have to do. We have to do the work.
Well, understanding reawakens in us. Someone triggers it in our lives, and we just begin to understand something a little bit more. Maybe, who knows? But there's a quote from HPB that I guess I'm would very much like to read, just to start. And it's about faith. That faith, which being primordial and revealed directly to humankind by their progenitors and informing egos, required no grace, no blind faith to believe, for it was knowledge. Now, it's rather dumbfounding that faith and wisdom are never really looked at as something. But look at the world we live in. Look what people have put their faith in. What is real to people? What is their highest ideal? This is why theosophy is kept alive. For the mind must be nurtured with the truth. So when one finds the truth, one begins to explore and see where truth lies. And it lies in all directions. But our understanding changes. Our discrimination becomes more acute. Our faith becomes stronger. But look, where's everyone's faith? Where's everyone's faith? Where does the mass of society, of humankind, put their faith? It's obvious. Yes?
Well, as far as religion goes, people put their faith in something they don't understand often, and that's really blind faith. But when you question them, if you told them that, they would not appreciate being told that, of course. So we put our faith in a bridge when we drive over it, for one thing.
Yes.
That's
yes.
A mundane example.
Yes.
We put our faith in the elevators. Not going to get stuck between floors.
Yes, and we collectively do that. We collectively do that. And you see what our collective consciousness has brought to us. What ideals have we perpetuated in the last 40 to 50 years? Well, we're in space. We're in the new frontier. We're new, you know, we've gone where no man has gone before. It's where our imagination has been spiked, but our faith that was is put in an outside source, and there is the problem. The source is within. Wisdom is an inherent quality that every human being has. That's why in the Gita there's three chapters dedicated to it. And wisdom, well, we know what wisdom is, but, you know, well, there's wisdom of the material world and there's wisdom of the occult world. But the physical world, if you don't see it, it doesn't exist. If you can't touch it, it's not there. If you can't prove it, it doesn't exist. And it's just simply, if I don't see it, it's not there. Now, even though as the mind is expanding, that understanding is beginning to dissolve. But to embrace man as the creator of the world in which he lives, one needs but study, faith, and wisdom. Yes.
We always remember a wonderful picture. It shows an old man wrapped in blankets sitting on a hilltop. His eyes are closed, but he's
up to the heavens. Well, every biblical story that we can imagine and remember, apply that to the inner life. Apply that to discovering for yourself the meaning of life. Yes?
Yeah, well then, that is the moment when we ourselves, if we would do that occasionally, and then try to understand the connection between looking to the heavens and looking within. A great deal of faith is established in one's own ability to grasp the meaning and our duties to one another here. It's a very plain statement which can be enlarged in one sense.
Yes. Well, we have been so impressed by religious ideas that they permeate our society, they permeate our world, so that the truth has to be self-evident. It has to be self-evident. And we can't look outside of ourselves. The journey's within. And this is what creates a problem, because no one can see that journey. No one can judge it. Only you can. Only you are the witness of your life. Everyone else just sees a body. But you know your life. You know what you... Sometimes you don't know why we do things, but the more we look and reflect, it becomes self-evident. We found interesting that these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings that how to live your life without creating more suffering and sorrow, how not to create karma. Well, when we say that, we're only insinuating difficult karma. How to create karma that is harmonious. And we are given steps on how to do that. It's just an attitude of mind. You walk through life not looking for the results of your labors. You walk through life being focused on that which is in front of you. You're not elated or cast down by the circumstances of life. It says, well, we found that these teachings of the Gita are found in the epistles of St. James. That these ideas are universal. And they are applied again and again to the moral character of man. That he should realize that within us is illimitable potential. Illimitable. We're only limited by our own imagination. That's it. Whatever we think, whatever makes us stop, whatever makes us look, and whatever makes us doubt, those are the things that direct our life. You know, and that if we want to understand life, if we want to be a co-worker with life, what do we have to do? What do we have to do? And the answer is simple. Nothing. We don't have to do anything. Well, we do. We have to renounce that personal idea. Renounce that personal nature. Not saying that it's bad. Not saying that, you know, I don't want this. No, no, no. It's not considered in that light. Because there's some other goal that we have in mind. The more time that we can spend on reality, and the less time we spend in the superficial, mundane world, we can help. Yes.
When we come to a railroad crossing, it says stop, look, and listen. And because there's danger there. And whenever, before we can apply anything, we need to stop, we need to look, and listen to be attentive. It's telling us, be attentive, be aware for your own safety and those of others, because we can do much unintended harm just through our own ignorance and by rushing ahead blindly. That's probably more harm done that way than any other way.
Yeah, it sort of goes with the thought, word, and deed, which is a Buddhist precept. That's how things are created. Stop, look, and listen is just an outward application of that. Thought, word, and deed.
Don't we have to also try to live in harmony with nature? Make a conscious effort to be doing right, performing our duty, and we know that it was right by the results. Doesn't that also lead us to wisdom?
We work with nature. Well, we better work with nature, because that's our body. That's this vehicle that we use to live, to be able to manifest on this material plane ideas. And that's what's always happened. There's always been that expression of ideas from the earliest of times. So what ideas do we hold to be true? That we are divine wisdom in essence? Our only problem is that we cannot access it because we're covered up in clay. And we think we are these clay statues. We're not. We are not that. We are not our feelings. We're not our emotions. We're not that. We're much more than that. This is only a limited expression of our true potential that we've been allowed to express in this incarnation through karmic deeds, through the process of living. We meet what we have created. We created this, the good and the bad. We created this activity in this city. We created this center in this city, the city of many churches, many religions, thanks to William Penn. Yes.
Well, no matter our background, our education, our assumed stature in terms of what wisdom and advancement we have made. However, in these rooms, we find out that we're ready for kindergarten. Once we assume that position of kindergarten, then we may move on to first, second, and third grade and finish grammar school. These teachings
are told that this is a school, and we make advances as we move forward. No one grades us. Life is our school. And we are given the opportunity to come back again and again and again to work out these problems that we have created. And the only one that can work them out is us. We made them, we can fix them. And if they don't need fixing, I'm sure we can refine them. But there's always work to be done. And before we look in the world around us, we need to look at ourselves. This is where we need to begin. Look within, for thou art Buddha. That within the recesses of our own heart is wisdom. And it's said that one of the words used to describe this wisdom is in the Kabbalah, or in Judaism, is Ein Sof, no thing. Because there is that beyond what we would call wisdom. Yes?
So when it comes to faith, we're thinking the first line of the declaration is the policy of what we, you know, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion. Probably faith, and it doesn't say it's having faith in theosophy, but it seems devotion and faith probably are pretty, you know, like maybe sister ideas. Can we investigate what the relation is?
Well, we would think that they're close relatives, if not the same thing in many ways. That devotion is what we devote our life to, what we devote our time to. And faith determines what that is, what we think is real. What do we have faith in? And outside God? No. I have faith that within myself there is the ability to understand. Maybe I won't understand it now, but I'll keep on making an endeavor to clear away the rubbish that I have piled up in front of me. And that's all I can do, is try, and ever try. And no one can judge us. No one can say or have any criticism. That's one of the curses of our age. Criticism. You know, we have so much doubt, we don't know who we are. And everything that we see in our world around us creates doubt, creates fear, creates separateness. We study the first fundamental, that there's that which is eternal, immutable, omnipresent, did I say eternal?
Boundless.
What?
And boundless.
Boundless, yes. Thank you for the assistance. But boundless. And we cannot comprehend that. So how can the finite mind comprehend the infinite? It can't. It can't. That's why we are said, well, meditate on that. Consider that. Expand on that. Go out into the universe. Expand your mind. That's abstract thought. That is what we need to rid our mind of all this stuff that we have called important, but it clutters our life, it clutters our mind, creates feelings, anxiety mostly, a lot of anxiety in this world, all right? And We need, as sentient beings, is to find ways to help our progress spiritually. And we do that by coming together and sharing these ideas, discussing the ideas amongst ourselves, so that if the questions that arise within you are sticking, are not quite coming out, and you don't even know how to express it, try. That effort is meaningful. Your participation in life is meaningful. St. James says that wisdom without works is nothing. Well, the Gita says the same thing. We are bound to action. We are bound to act. So, how do we act? And it's spelt out. If you want to, we all can do it. Can you be resigned? Can you imagine what renunciation means? Renounce in your mind and go through the process. You don't have to, just go through it in your mind. Renounce. Renounce all those things that we hold to be precious and that we call us, the personality. Yes?
So when it comes to, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, false ideas that are held in popular culture, and one of those we think is that people really think that the path of freedom is if only I had enough money. If I have enough money, I'll be free to do what I want to do. Well,
do you know who told us that?
I don't know.
A rich man.
What?
A rich man.
Okay. Well, the thing is, we think probably there's a lot of people who have that amount of money who know that the pursuit of that money would never have brought the money because they've done other things and the money is the effect of what they've done. And they have their freedom more so if they have that much money. We don't know. But the mistake would be to put one's faith in the idea that money's going to bring me freedom and devote oneself to making money. So that's perhaps the relationship. Perhaps it's like faith is like step one to see if it's real, and devotion is the word devotion, think of vow.
Well, if there's this desire to be free, a desire to be free,
which people mistake, we think, for, you know, we would think that the desire to be free underneath it is the desire to not want anything, but the desire to not want
Wanting anything. Yeah, but the desire to not want anything is wanting it. Because that idea plants in the mind that idea of desire. We think about things too much. Just don't. That which you do not think about cannot affect you. Now we consider and we analyze things to no end. We judge things and we evaluate. No. If you do not want this, do not think about it. Push it out of your mind. Do something else. You know, that's the way we try to control ourselves. And look, we're all not perfect. So we got a lot of work to do. Yes.
Earlier, we
didn't hear from him yet.
Okay. Sure.
We'll get to you next. Thank you. Yes, sir.
That was a very interesting statement. But we have something that we can look to that really illustrates that point Socrates, who was poverty stricken and wore his poverty like a badge of honor, not only was he free from money, he was free from the effects of money, facing death when friends of his who had money and offered to buy his freedom, he rejected them because he had something stronger than what was being offered to him.
Yeah. You know, it's rather curious, but we were reading an article by HPB, and she made a reference to Socrates. She goes, yeah, even old henpecked Socrates, you know, and that that made us stop and start. And yeah, he had a personal nature as well. And he had an environment in which he lived in, you know, and we judge things as having some great meaning, but they only have the meaning that we want to give them. They only have the power that we give it. We give it power. It's what we think about is what controls us. Give it up. Don't think about it. Decide what you're going to think about. Decide. Now.
Earlier, the phrase was used, we find these truths to be self-evident. Now, usually we, being raised under the Declaration of the Constitution, the rest is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But what, in theosophy, when we say self, there's three selves. So if something is self-evident, it can be on the surface, but it can also be the higher self or the self of all. And I think if the writers of the framers, as it were, of our government constitution were pretty enlightened people, actually. And, you know, they weren't perfect, of course, but at least they put forth some revolutionary, these were revolutionary ideas.
Well, yes. Yes, they were. Because power does not want to give up power. The king, the moneyed, do not want to abdicate. And that's the problem today. Nothing has changed. Our kings and rulers have become other moneyed corporations or groups or ideas.
But the framework is still there.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Still there.
The framework is still there. So yes, we would agree that it is an enlightened document, and that these signers of the Declaration were mere instruments for all of us, because this was an effort of the age, this coming forth. In the very back.
There is a book by B.P. Wadia called Living the Life, and in that book is a chapter that deals with the faith and attachment to fame, to good fortune, to power. And it's a very interesting treatise on the psychology of how we bind our mind into conditioned experience in the pursuit of those three things. So the book's available in the reference library.
Yes, another confirmation of the power of faith and wisdom. We are in control. We are in control. We are the captains of our own ship. We are in control of this horse, which has been running amok. Life is a positive affirmation of who we are. We are that light. Children of light, as you go forth into the world, seek to do gentle service to all that lives. Renunciation of self, yes.
Do we have to look at the idea pursuits. But if we can develop our intuition, our Moody principle, and it can go along with wisdom as well, because if we can find the, if we have that intuitive sense about the true, about true wisdom, we can also develop the idea of a true faith as well in something real.
We do have that. We just don't want to accept it. We have that faith. We're being told again and again that it, that is inherent within our very nature. We just refuse to do the work to uncover it again because it hurts. It's a bother. It's a nuisance. I'd rather do this. I have 10 million things to do. I do not want to look at that. I do not want to deal with that. I'm having too much fun. And if they're not having too much fun, we're having too much pain and misery, I'm too distracted. Yes?
We always approach these teachings, and it's advised that we do so with a sense of humor. We remember a cartoon of an individual who traveled through Tibet, climbed the mountain to see the old wise man. He had tears in his eyes, he was crying, he was complaining. Wise man put his finger on his nose and says, "Get over yourself."
Right.
Yeah.
What does that
go figure
mean?
Go figure, right? Get over yourself. Well, that's what it is. And we always, that's all of our problems in some way or another. We're so full of ourselves. We think we're so important. And we struggle and we fight and we lament and, you know, get over ourselves. It's not important. We only make it important. It's not important. Be free of all that. Renounce those feelings. It's funny. Life gives us these ideas, and they're free. So lo and behold, I see there's a seminar on communications. And lo and behold, you know, it was about communicating, talking, expressing oneself. And they were charging a lot of money. But when it came down to it, it was a class in theosophy. They just fancied it up and doctored it up so that they could make money and call it theirs. But it was theosophy. Just theosophy. And I was humbled by it that someone was that perceptive to be able to do this. But then it became evident that they were doing it for all the wrong reasons. And that the only course of action was you just don't participate once you know. Because, you know, knowledge, if it's not applied, it's for naught. That's why life gives us these conflicts and these difficulties, so that we can work them out. We have to refine, we have to wear down the sharp edges that we have developed of our personality. Every one of us does things that annoy somebody. We just do it. But we don't know it. We're just being ourselves. Well, you know that when someone reacts to you in a certain way, you know you're annoying them. You know, And it's a gift. It's a gift. You begin to understand people. to yourself? Quick one.
We like the phrase mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter.
Well, it's true. You know, the big expression was that life is empty and has no meaning. We fill it up and we give it meaning. And we do. By the ideas, by the faith that we hold. And we all, every one of us has faith in something. Faith in something, either family, religion, or something deep inside that you know is right, that is true, and that you see in everybody else. That it's in everybody. Everybody has this same struggle going on. We are not different from each other. We know it's, if we have struggled through it, and as you struggle through things, you become wise. You develop wisdom. And the wisdom is how to bring harmony back in your presence. And you do that by resigning. Resign resignation of the personal self. When we do that, all of nature rushes in to aid us. All of it rushes in. And there's where our power comes from. It's nothing that we do, it's what we don't do. We have to die. And that means the personality. It has to die. But not die that you kill it and you drag it through the street. No. You just have to let it go. We used it and we're here, and now we need to let things by the wayside. And that's, you'll see, all of us are trying to do that. To control the personal nature. Well, if you found these ideas to be helpful, you're invited to participate in Thought, Word, and Deed. You can be involved in the activities here at the Lodge only by volunteering. And there's always someone that will assist you in helping you along these lines. This room, this building is kept open to voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And all are welcome.